The real story of how leftist agendas create the very problems they complain about. The Reformation Society, we are seeking to change the world for Christ, apply the Lordship of Christ to all areas of life, and as part of a Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism, we're wanting to look at the news behind the news and the worldviews underlying trends and policies of today. So, leftist agendas create the very problems they complain about. What do leftists complain about? Poverty, suffering, abuse. But the poverty, suffering, and abuse afflicting so much of the world's population today are the inevitable results of leftist policies and socialist solutions. In fact, you have more poverty, more suffering, and more abuse in socialist countries, and the more socialist a country is, the more suffering, poverty, and abuse. In fact, it's a byword. Ethiopia was a breadbasket of Africa until they became socialist. And then you had non-stop famine. We have had every country where communism takes over in the aim of lifting up the poor. The people get poorer. They starve more. Nobody starved in Rhodesia, but many starve in Zimbabwe. Rhodesia exported food. Zimbabwe needs to import, well, forget import. They need free millions of tons of food aid every year. This is the problem. Basket cases of Africa, bread baskets of Africa become basket cases. The economic collapse of Marxist Zimbabwe under Robert Mugabe is just one extreme example of how socialist solutions always produce worse problems. And I defy anyone to find an exception to this rule. Zimbabwe, the liberators, oppressed the people worse than they ever had been before they were liberated. Boots on the neck being beaten and whipped in Samora Machel Avenue in downtown capital of Zimbabwe, Harare, and more than half of the total population of Zimbabwe voted with their feet, a vote of no confidence in liberation by fleeing across the border into, well, at one time it was apartheid South Africa, but even with our problems today, it's still not as bad as what Zimbabwe is, and the Zimbabweans have fled to the four corners of the earth and to every country around them. One of the problems liberals complain about is violence. Their solution is take away the guns, disarm the civilians. In fact, you can see this is a work of art. It's a monument. It's a political statement outside the United Nations headquarters in New York. And notice, this is not an AK-47 assault rifle. It's not a terrorist weapon. It's not an RPG. It's not a PKM. This isn't a panga. No, it's a revolver. This isn't a military weapon. It's a civilian weapon. And quite aside from the fact there's not a revolver in the world that's got a barrel that long. But forget the fact that these people don't seem to understand the basics. But why did they choose a revolver, a policeman's weapon or a civilian's weapon? Why didn't they choose a military or a terrorist weapon, like an AK-47's barrel twisted? Because they don't want to disarm the military. They don't want to disarm the governments, they want to disarm the civilians. And most tellingly in Rwanda, Roméo Dallaire, the Canadian general in charge of the United Nations peacekeeping mission in Rwanda, documented how, after the United Nations had helped disarm the population in Rwanda, they were ordered to stand by and do nothing while 500,000 to 800,000 Rwandese were slaughtered in a gun-free zone. Rwanda was a gun-free zone. The Interahamwe mass-murdering Hutu were able to mobilize the people with 1 million machetes, pangas, provided by Red China, to slaughter the people who had just been disarmed by the United Nations and the MRND. And so Rwanda, like all genocides of the 20th century, was preceded by gun control, gun confiscation. I documented this in my book, Holocaust in Rwanda. Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Because of this, the wrath of the Lord is upon you. Now, just take the lockdown lunacy that destroyed millions of jobs worldwide. It's just another case where the cure was infinitely worse than the disease. Just today, I've been with my cardiologist at the local hospital, running on a treadmill while they were increasing the angle and the speed to see if they could induce a heart attack to check that I was healthy. And he said that the amount of patients, cardiology patients, heart patients, who've died because they couldn't get the treatment, because the ICUs where they should have been and where they should have, it was devoted to COVID cases that didn't arrive. And, of course, we had the whole Cape Town National Conference Centre turned into a COVID-19 designated emergency hospital, which I don't know if they ever received anyone there, but certainly wasn't used much. But other hospitals had to put everyone else's chronic conditions on hold. And so we might have lost more people so far this year due to the lockdown than to the COVID-19. But this lockdown lunacy, even if it's been justified to save the lives of individuals, which many medical professionals say is highly questionable, if not not true, but it certainly caused more poverty, killed more jobs, killed more industries. And do you remember these pictures back in March, just before the lockdown lunacy? Now, I don't know if you've actually seen this, aside from on pictures, if you've seen this in real life, but these were the images they were showing us. Do you remember these images? People just falling down dead in the streets in Wuhan, and the hazmat suit people having to just come and move these highly contagious bodies. Nobody's seen this anywhere in the world, but we saw it in the pictures. I think these were staged, faked, acted events in order to stampede people into this idea that there was a real pandemic. It was like the bubonic plague, where hundreds of millions of people were going to die. They actually said that hundreds of millions of people are going to die this year from COVID-19 worldwide. Millions are going to die in South Africa from this. And on that basis, we all agreed to a three-week lockdown to prepare the hospitals and so on. And the three-week lockdown, as you know, kind of was extended. Unconstitutionally, of course, and naturally, our Bill of Rights was infringed on every level. Just take broad-based black economic empowerment, BBBEE, affirmative action, race quotas. This fuels and aggravates the very racism that claimed to want to end. Because, you know, if you love someone, you demand high standards of them. A father who allows his son to be lazy doesn't really love him. But if you are going to always pander and pamper and mollycoddle and give a sense of entitlement, what are you going to raise? A brat, a lazy, self-centered brat. And that's what happens with specialized treatment. When you pussyfoot around, you give people things for free and you just give them promotions and jobs that they haven't earned, what are you doing? You're actually destroying those people. And so South Africa used to have God-fearing people, strong, intact families. But as Walter Williams and as Ben Carson and Thomas Sowell have documented the United States of America in books like War Against Blacks, State Against Blacks, and so on, how in America, in the 1960s, black families were more intact and their marriages were stronger and their families were more church-attending than white families. Until they started under Lyndon B. Johnson, LBJ, they started the Great War, Welfare State, the War on Poverty. And since then, America's moved from where black children were 96% born into an intact family of father and mother in the home. Now, the vast majority of blacks in America are born in single-parent homes, where in many cases they don't even know who the father is. Forget about seeing him. And so in America, they've moved to a stage where you can have three generations all on welfare who've never done a day's work. They documented a 28-year-old grandmother, 14-year-old mother, and their child. You know, so you've got this granddaughter, daughter, all living on welfare, none of whom ever done any work, and there's not a male to be seen. And the state has destroyed the black families. And from black people having a higher moral standard and a higher standard of intact families pre-60s, it's now hip-hop, rap, drugs, gangs, and all sorts of garbage. And as Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams demonstrated in America, state welfare has destroyed the black people. Well, in South Africa, you could also say, black people in South Africa used to be far more Christian, far more intact before BBBEE. What you've seen now is, you didn't used to see the drunkenness, the drug abuse, the homosexuality, the perversion, and so on. Black people in this country are being destroyed by the BBBEE. If you hate people, that's what you do. You pamper them with something like BBBEE race quotas. On the other hand, this BBBEE has actually made a lot of whites in this country better by forcing them to be more innovative, harder working, and so on. So actually, if the government's goal was to hurt whites and to help blacks, they're doing the exact opposite. And that's what it does. That's exactly the way it does. And broad-based black economic empowerment looks more like this these days. A few elite fat cats at the top, they get the gravy and the cream, and the rest of the people don't get much. And we've just seen one state-owned enterprise after another, they call them SOEs, wrecked by just sheer looting, complete and utter destruction. We're not talking billions, we're talking trillions of rands looted. BBBEE harms the very people they're meant to help by encouraging a laziness and an entitlement and a corruption and an incompetence that undermines the economy. It steals from the taxpayers, it chases away the investors, it chases away the job creators, and it results in far greater unemployment, far greater poverty, destitution, drug abuse, and despair, not to mention crime, not to mention the spiritual devastation it does in people. Every year that the ANC has been in power, they've increased the number of unemployed by a million. When Mandela became president, our unemployed were 2.something million. Today, it's 30 million unemployed. So in the 26 years of the ANC's worthless misrule, they've added a million unemployed to the ranks of the unemployed every single year. And people still vote for them because they promise good things. They just don't deliver it. Even The Economist has had to admit that South Africa's been corrupted on every level. And as for Eskom, what can we say? I mean, just one newspaper headline was 139 billion, billion with a B. That's not million, billion. Theft probe. Can you imagine? Not to mention the DA, who overcharged us 1.6 billion in just an 18-month period for water. Do you remember the drought, the worst drought in 100 and something years that hits us 4 years ago, ended 3 years ago? We're still paying 800% water surcharge because of the drought. And I'm sure you've all noticed the drought ended a long time ago, and our dams are overflowing this year. Overflowing. Has anyone noticed the DA in the city of council and this city works for you bringing the water tariff down? They should be giving us a rebate. Just in the first 18 months, they had overtaxed us 1.6 billion just in Cape Town for water. Just water. Corruption is killing us. You have plowed wickedness. You have reaped iniquity. You have eaten the fruit of lies. So the people who said, we for the poor, we for the little guy, we want to liberate, we want to uplift, we want to... And what have they done? The exact opposite of what they've promised. By campaigning for abortion, pro-choicers are destroying their descendants. They're aborting their own futures. The inevitable result is a disproportionately aging population and a shrinking tax base. This week, a friend in America sent me this unique artwork in a cemetery in America to help parents to deal with their grief that they killed their own children. I mean, what a grief. What might have been? What might have been? How many millions of lives snuffed out by short-sighted, selfish lies from Planned Parenthood? And by the way, Planned Parenthood is just coming to Hollywood big time. They've invested hundreds of millions into a whole new series of films to counteract the phenomenal success of Unplanned. They've now got Unpregnant, a comedy, celebrating abortion and so on, in a nice comedy. And they've got a whole series of pushing abortion films because Unplanned really hurt them. So But they've got money. They're just investing in a whole spate of films to encourage people and laugh at abortions and make abortion socially acceptable. So Ted Baer sent out a warning about that. Every abortion stops a beating heart. One heart stops, another heart breaks. So this year we thought it was appropriate to design Babies' Lives Matter. You must not murder. Abortion is murder. I was asked at one time in Parliament, can you quote me one verse in the Bible that forbids abortion? I said, that's easy, Exodus 20, verse 13. And they're staring at me for a while. They're obviously, the cogwheels slowly turning. Maybe they weren't turning. Okay, that could be an exaggeration. And I said, you shall not murder. No, I mean about abortion. life begins at conception. Abortion is murder. No, I mean a verse that condemns abortion. Yes, you shall not commit murder. God hates the hands that shed innocent blood. Proverbs 6, would you like that one too? And I start going through, they sacrificed their sons and their daughters to demons. They shed innocent blood. But this is the thing, they want the word abortion. But even if you found the word abortion, but why it's called abortion? It's murder. That's why we hold signs that say, in God's court, abortion is murder. And we've gone to Parliament, and this year we're also campaigning to protect pro-life medics from prosecution, conscientious objectors. We need to make a stand and let people know. Speak up for those who cannot speak themselves. Life begins at conception. Abortion is murder. Rescue those being led away to death. Hold back those staggering towards slaughter. Psalm 106, verse 37. They even sacrificed their sons and their daughters to demons and shed innocent blood, the blood of their sons and daughters, whom they sacrificed. This is the point. In many people's minds, abortion's justified because it's going to get in the way of my studies or my career plans, or it's going to be embarrassing or inconvenient. And yes, that's short term, but isn't it sacrificing the permanent on the altar of the immediate? To get over an immediate problem, embarrassment, threat, undermining, inconvenience, whatever it is it worth killing one of your own descendants? By promoting a welfare socialist state, socialists penalize productivity. They punish productivity. They reward inactivity, and they reward failure, and they reward vice. As Ronald Reagan said in the one speech I heard from him personally when I was in Washington, D.C., January 1988, at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, Ronald Reagan said, "The closest thing to eternal life on earth is a government-subsidized program." He said, "Government has a philosophy. If it works, tax it. If it doesn't work, subsidize it." And people were laughing, but that is government mentality. They subsidize failure, just think SAA and ESCOM, and they tax and penalize and punish hardworking, productive, and those who are creating jobs. That's exactly the wrong way around. What one needs to do is what Singapore does, which is what Hong Kong did. How did Hong Kong develop a bigger economy than Red China? In a miniature area without any natural resources, no taxation, became a tax haven. Job creators came in, phenomenal expansion of industry because, you know, the biggest problem to business is government. You know, in this continent, as far as I know, there's only one country that you can open up a business without any taxes and paperwork, and that's Rwanda. Rwanda, one page, you can register your business, no taxes. Government isn't trying, as I said, in Rwanda, we don't want foreign aid, we just want fair trade. And they're booming. They're selling billions of tulips to Amsterdam. They're selling coffee. They're producing things that they're exporting all over the world. Why? Because they don't want a handout, they just want fair trade. And they're not trying to tax their businesses into oblivion. They're trying to encourage businesses to come to Rwanda. If Cape Town wants to kill unemployment, all you've got to do is create a tax haven. Job creators and businesses will pour into a place where there's no red tape and where they're not going to be taxed to death. They have most of their hard work and earnings confiscated by rapacious politicians who are out to penalize the productive. Just think of economic suicide. You could not imagine what money was like when I was growing up. I could get 50 cents as my pocket money for the week. What could 50 cents buy? Well, 20 cents would get you a Saturday matinee ticket at the cinema. 5 cents would get you a Coca-Cola at the cinema. 5 cents would get a bag of chips. In fact, remember, it moved from 4 cents to 5 cents, and I wonder if anyone could ever afford to buy chips again. Because 1 cent was, you could get 4 chappies for 1 cent. I could get a full Airfix model aeroplane thing with the paint for under 50 cents. You know, whether you make your tank and so on. Now, when you think of what you could do with the money then, do you realize 1 rand in 1980 could buy more than 100 rand can today in 2020? If I say, and some of you know this, my first motorbike, 1981, I came out the army, I bought my first motorbike for 1,000 rand. New, brand new, 250, off-road Honda XL, straight out the warehouse, drove it out very unsteadily because I'd never driven a bike in my life before. But R1,000. 10 years before, my dad had bought a car for R1,000. Now, I bought a bicycle for R1,000 about the year 2000. And in about 2010, you could buy a pair of running shoes for R1,000. And I'm told by Calvin now that the pair of running shoes now cost what? R2,000, R3,000, depending how good the shoes are. So we've gone from you could buy a car or a motorbike for R1,000 to you can't even buy a good pair of running shoes. That is theft. How many people realize that, quite aside from tax, inflation is a hidden tax? It's government debasing your currency. It's theft. And you've got the taxpayer being milked no end for SABC, SAA, which should, I mean, it's not like they're doing it for free. I've flown in SAA, they charge you. They don't give away the tickets free. How are they running at a loss? Why must we bail them out to tens of billions of rands every few months? Just staggering. This is looting on a high level. Believing that government produces wealth is like believing that wrecking balls produce buildings. Governments are the biggest obstacle to an economy. They don't help economies, they break economies down. Proof of this, look at Singapore and Hong Kong. What the free market can do with no government interference is produce the greatest economies on the planet. And when you want to see what communism could do, well, just compare West Germany with East Germany. West Germany was free enterprise, East Germany was communism. The difference is between a Mercedes-Benz and a Trabant. And you need the Berlin Wall to separate, to shoot people in the back who want to escape from the socialist welfare. That's the ideas of communism are so good, they've got to kill people if they try to escape from the workers' paradise in Cuba to swim shark-infested waters to Florida and so on. Government creates wealth the same way ticks create blood. Polyticks, poly many ticks, blood-sucking parasites. Polyticks, many blood-sucking parasites. One time I'd come back from the farm, Calvin had picked up a tick. I got a phone call from home, emergency, had to come home because Calvin had a tick and my family was not sure how to handle ticks. Well, being brought up in Rhodesia, I knew about ticks because tick bite fever was part of our life. And so I've got both my daughters and my wife watching in the bathroom as I applied Vaseline to Calvin's back and saw the literally the legs of the tick climbing out of his back, which is very creepy. And the moment he is out because he couldn't breathe under Vaseline, I lift him up, put him on the counter, start to run, smacked him with a fist, blood splashed everywhere, and screams. My daughter Daniela says, "Whose blood is that?" I said, "Calvin's." More screams. You don't get teaching opportunities like that often. And I'd say, this tick is like the ANC government. It's a blood-sucking parasite. Just like the tick doesn't produce its own blood. It lives off the blood of its host. So this government produces nothing but infection. All it does is leech off the blood of the taxpayers. And that's when, you know, you've taught something then that's worth days in a normal classroom. So let me get this straight. I'm paying taxes on my wages, then paying sales tax to spend my own money, then paying income tax and money that was already taxed, and then when I die, my kids pay the death tax and money that was already taxed. Not to mention, the money that you give to the Lord's work also gets taxed. And when it used to be, by the way, that when I went to the Bible study, I could buy Bibles. By the way, my first Bible, hardback, brand new Bible, cost R2. You could buy Bibles without taxes because Bibles were tax exempt. The Bible study is tax immune. We didn't pay tax on Bibles. In fact, by the way, in the old South Africa, you didn't pay tax on bread either. Sales tax was off for things like bread. But somehow or another, we've got a bunch of criminals who have convinced people that it's absolutely normal for the government to get something like a third to 40% of all that you earn. Now, while the media is all focused on this overblown wave of COVID-19, there's a much bigger tsunami tidal wave of poverty following from all the people whose businesses and jobs were destroyed. Just think of how many people in Cape Town's jobs that depend on tourism, for example. Think of the hotels, the B&Bs, a whole lot of tourism industries, restaurants. How are they meant to survive? And the people they employ, and the ripple effect. So we now live in a nation where doctors destroy health, and lawyers destroy justice, and universities destroy knowledge, and governments destroy freedom, and the press destroys information, and religion destroys morals, and our banks destroy the economy. Now, can we see anything in that that's not true? I don't know, but it's a great quote. I have no idea who that is, but it sort of summarizes things pretty well, doesn't it? And so the rand's been going down. I remember going to England and to Germany and getting so excited I got more D-mark and more pounds back for my Rhodesian dollar. I remember when the Rhodesian dollar was three times more powerful than the American dollar. And I remember when the South African rand was stronger than the British pound and stronger than the American dollar. And it was exciting to go overseas and, you know, you put down your money to get more pounds and dollars back. And now, to think our money is down to Mickey Mouse currency. Do you know what the rand is named after? The Witwatersrand rand, which the British government called the richest piece of real estate on earth, the greatest empire in the world, waged a ruinous Anglo-Boer war against the Transvaal for the purpose of acquiring the Transvaal's Witwatersrand, after which we name our money. The rand was the strongest, hardest currency on the planet. There was a time when the rand was stronger than the Swiss franc, the D-mark, the dollar, and the pound. The rand was not sneezed at. People around the world respected South Africa. There was a time when South Africa had the highest respect as we produced the greatest doctors in the world, like Chris Barnard, the greatest golfers in the world, like Gary Player. We produced some of the finest soldiers. I could go to Poland and have people shake my hand with great enthusiasm, with excitement. The South African Air Force were the only people who flew us aid during the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising in 1944. I didn't know that, because the history books had changed it to the Royal Air Force, because they didn't like South Africa at that stage. And the way how they twisted history, but the Poles still remember it, was South African Air Force went there. There was a time when South Africa was recognized as having the strongest and the best when it came to weapons, when it came to medical science, when it came to technology. We were leading the world. Honestly, we made atomic bombs. South Africa led the world in so much technology. And now? There was a time when a degree from University of Cape Town was world-renowned, respected. Now, I think it's probably a black mark against your name. I don't know if it would actually help you get a job. It might be more of a hindrance than a help. Because who knows what these things are worth now that the government's been messing with these things for so long. But that our rand has gone from being stronger than the pound to being, what is it now, 18, 19, sometimes 20 or 21 rand to the pound? Unbelievably disgusting. Because at the same time, the pound's gone down too. Socialist welfare results in increasing overtaxation, an escalating debt burden, and inevitable bankruptcy. Now, if you want to know what overtaxation is, understand this. The American colonists waged a war against Britain because Britain was taxing them 4% of their total income. 4%. Can you believe it? Give me liberty or give me death. No taxation without representation. And they waged a war because the British taxed them 4% if you added all tax together. I've said to many Americans since, so how do you like your taxation with representation? Now you're getting taxed 40%. Yay! Wouldn't you like the Queen back? It's just extraordinary to think how people over the years have gotten used to this much taxation. Now, we've got economists who convinced me of TEAL, Total Economic Activity Levy, that we could cancel all our taxes, income tax, VAT, GST, the lot, no taxes needed, and replace it with TEAL, Total Economic Activity Levy, where for every electronic bank transaction, whether it's an EFT or withdrawal from your card, 1% goes to the government taxation. That would provide more than what they're getting in right now. Now you may say, well, how's that possible? Because this would be across the board. It would include Anglo-American, it should include Old Mutual, it would include everyone. Oppenheimer, Rupert, the works. If it's even across, because do you know people like Rockefeller, one of the richest people in the world, they found out when he became vice president of the United States that he'd never paid taxes in his life. Because he had everything wrapped up in trust. You know, really rich people don't pay taxes. I don't know if you realize that. It's the poor middle class and poor people, they pay the taxes, but the super rich people, they somehow don't pay taxes. Because they've got everything in trust, and they don't know what money is either. They don't carry money. Someone around is always signing for them. Like Prince Charles, he doesn't handle money because he's a prince, you know, that sort of thing. So I put this to Stephen Mitford Goodson, who is an economist, once directs the Southern Reserve Bank, and he looked at it further, crunched the numbers, and others have too, and they've come up with, we don't need 1%. 0.5% would do just fine. In fact, if we were running our economy the way we should, without corruption and inefficiency, we could go less than 0.5%. And so Cape Exit, for example, is working on a principle of 0.5%. They're talking about 55 cents out of every 100 rand in teal would be adequate to running it. And personally, I think you can go less than that. Now, which business wouldn't like to open up a company in a country with less than 1% tax? That's just to give you an idea of how much of our wealth is stolen. And so when people think, we need the government to pay for our schools, and you wouldn't need the government to pay for anything if they weren't taxing you so much. Nothing is free. Take education. It's been calculated in America, now America's more efficiently run than South Africa at the moment, that if you want the government to educate your child, free education is going to cost you 12 times more than if you did private education. Now, of course, private schools cost more because they don't get tax exemption. But if you took the number of students and the amount of money, it works out that you're paying 12 times more per student in state education than in private education. So if you just took away the government taxation of it, we could all afford private education and would be a whole lot cheaper too, because they've even got to pay taxes. In our country, your private Christian schools have to pay a colossal amount to be registered with this cursed government, who then you've got to pay for their blasted inspectors who come along to inspect your school, which is outrageous. Since when is any private school in this country having a lower standard than the government schools? In fact, when we've said to the inspector, why don't you inspect the government schools? He said, oh, no, we are not allowed to. We're only allowed to inspect the private schools. I said, but are there any government schools that have these standards that we have to adhere to? He said, no, none of them. And this is the hypocrisy. And we know school inspectors from the state whose own children go to private schools. Now, that tells you something. When you don't want to support your own product. Amos 8, verse 5 to 7, making the ephah small and the shekel large, falsifying the scales by deceit, that we may buy the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals, even sell the bad wheat. The Lord has sworn, surely I will never forget any of their works. Remember, in the center of our 1 rand coin, aside from the springbok, is Solidio Gloria. And I remember when those coins were silver. But 1 rand used to buy more than 100 rand can buy now. A lot more. Socialism destroys initiative, an incentive, an industry, an income. The unworkable wastage of welfare and socialism destroys people's initiative, incentive, industry, and income. The Bible says, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. I don't know how many have heard the story of the grasshopper and the ant. You know, the ant's working hard, laying up and preparing for winter, and then there's the grasshopper popping all over the place. Couldn't care, along comes winter. And this is the thing. Or the mother hen, remember the mother hen story? How she goes and nobody wants to help her with gathering, harvesting, cooking, but they all want to come there when it comes time to eat the bread. And so it was said that the hen never bothered to bake any bread after that and realized that those who don't want to contribute to it are the ones who want to consume it. And these are good parables against socialism. Those who worship the idol of chance by squandering their earnings and gambling will end up as bankrupt as those who engage in unworkable wastage of welfare and socialism. If you want to see a whole lot of people who can't do maths, you go down to Grand Theft. Grand Theft, on one night, now I'm going back quite a few years, but on one night, 84 people had to hand over their keys and sign over their cars and sometimes wake up their children in their pajamas in the back seat on a Friday night and walk out the gates of Grand West because they'd gambled everything and then they had to sign over their cars for their debts and walk out and walk home. Couldn't even call a taxi or because they had nothing. This is the Grand West who puts up these big signs. You could win a million. Of course, you could lose everything you've got too. And then they talk about gamble with your head, not with your heart. Oh, come on. What a bunch of pathological liars. But people who gamble can't do maths. You've got a far better chance of being struck by lightning than winning the lotto. You've got a 5 times greater chance of being struck by lightning than winning the national lottery, for example. If you look at the opulence of these casinos, do you think they're welfare charities that give away things for free? And yet there's people who just ignore all the evidence around them and they go there and think that this institution exists to make me rich. The odds are the house wins. And they've organized it that way. But you see movies like 007, and he never loses. He always wins somehow. I mean, everyone else loses, but somehow he doesn't. I remember when one of my family members came back from Sun City, all exuberant. I won! And told me the amount of money he'd won. And I said, well, did you lose anything? Yes. So how much did you, well, actually came home with less and went, but I won this. And did you keep it? No, I kept gambling till I lost it all. But this excitement of having won came back poorer than it went, but there was this tremendous excitement. Every casino is windowless around the world. None of them have clocks. And by the way, there's always alcohol sold, and they've got free salted peanuts. Now, why is there free salted peanuts? So that you are thirsty, and about the only things you can drink there is alcohol, which, of course, plays with your logic senses. And there's no clocks or any windows to remind you of time, day of night, whether it's daytime, nighttime, sun setting. So you lose sense of time. You're very thirsty. You're drinking lots of alcohol. And everything around is just encouraging people to gamble more, gamble more. And they've even got, I've seen this because the ice rinks then had to go there many a time. And they've actually got these card machines that you can draw cash and you can be buying chips with your credit cards. They make it so easy for you to bankrupt yourself. I've actually been to Las Vegas on speaking tours because there's a lot of Baptists and others who hold their national conventions in Las Vegas. You know why? Cheapest hotels anywhere. You want to for conventions. So you'll get places like the whole Baptist convention, Southern Baptists who don't believe in gambling or alcohol, and they'll go to Las Vegas because they can have the cheapest venues and the cheapest meals. But you can't get anywhere. You can't get to your rooms, the gate, the lifts without going past slot machines and gambling opportunities, and they get the people. They get them. And people lose everything. And it's so bad, so I was told by a pastor in Las Vegas, just go one block behind the main street, and you'll see boarded up, wrecked, blighted, destroyed. And the people who work there, we're talking about now the waiters and so on, they will take their tips of the night or their earnings of the week, and before they go home to their children, so on, will go on and lose it all on the... And they know this is going to happen. But tonight's going to be different, and I'm going to win. But there's a lot of people who don't just do this with the casinos, but they do it with the economy. They think the economy is one big roulette wheel as well. And yeah, roulette wheels and you drink at the same time. That makes it even more fun. And if you want to see casino capitalism at its worst, you've got to see the Inside Job film, which is not a documentary as such. It's more of a drama, as I said, a film that cost over $20 trillion to make. It's about the 2008 bubble, where they destroyed the jobs of tens of millions of people, the homes of tens of millions of people, the pensions and earnings and savings of tens of millions of people, through this selling worthless derivative bubbles. And this was the October surprise that brought Obama to power. And then Obama rewarded these guys by making his Obama administration the most Wall Street run in history. This Inside Job, and it's part of our library downstairs, well worth seeing. Proverbs 10, verse 2 to 4, treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivers from death. He who has a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. The mentality of many people, I don't need to work, I don't need to innovate, I don't need to produce, I don't need to provide a service. I can just bank on luck. and I'm going to somehow benefit at someone else's expense. Now think of gambling in terms of biblical ethics. Don't do to others what you don't want done to yourself. And yet you can't win at gambling except at someone else's expense. If you ever win, odds are you won't, but if you did, it would be at the expense of how many people's children going hungry and without shoes, without education, without medical care, because the irresponsible parent gambled it all. You can only gain at someone else's expense. And if you lose, which the odds are you are going to lose, you're not a good steward of what God's entrusted you with. So gambling is against every bit of Christian work ethic and stewardship. Take feminism. Feminism leads to increased abuse of women. By promoting feminism and forcing women into the workplace, which was done deliberately to force women into the workplace to make more money, to pay more taxes, and increase the taxes to force the mother out of the home, it had several goals. One thing was to bring down the number of children being born in Europe in particular. And so Europe, the average woman in Europe before the First World War was having 8, 9, 10 children. By the Second World War, because women were now in the workplace, it was more like 2 or 3. And of course, by now, it's more likely that if they have one, that's a lot. Otherwise, they probably had several abortions and adopted a dog. And that's partly to genocide the people of Europe, the base for Christian civilization, and to increase power to the state. Feminism aimed to convince women that being a mother and a homemaker and raising next generation is not worthy of their attention. So much better to be abused in the workplace and pay taxes to the government. And so secular humanists have greatly increased the abuse of women because they've brought about a dramatic decline in birth rates. From the average woman in Europe having 8 children in 1910 to now it's 1.2, it's brought such a dramatic decline in birth rates that they're now importing people who hate them and want to kill them and chop their heads off from the Middle East. And it's destroyed the amount of intact families because the amount of divorces that have resulted from the fact that you've got two partners working, and how many well-balanced children are there left in the world? Well, not too many, it seems. The abuse of women has seldom been worse than it is today. Women have never been less respected and more abused than they are now. And this is thanks to feminist pastors like this heretic, creep character. These people are the ones who are teaching women that your place is to not be in a home and not raise children, rather have abortions, because she's pro-abortion and all that. And you can see this. I have seen this in the undergrounds in London. I have gotten up, as I was trained to do in Rhodesia, to give my seat in the underground how many times, and before the woman with the bags or whatever could sit down, some youngster sat down there with his earphones and headphones, whatever, he's in, just driving away. And you even talk to them, they don't even respond. And sometimes the women look at you like you just spat in their face. They're so pre-programmed. A man being chivalrous was insulting to them. Males. Males sitting there on their blasted, cursed, damned cell phones while a pregnant woman stands in front of them. These men should be flogged. And then they should be forced to clear minefields in a war zone and to chew glass while crawling over a minefield and being whipped. Honestly, this is a disgrace. Not every male is a man and not every man is a gentleman. There are standards. But by the same token, not every female is a woman, not every woman is a lady. There's standards there too. The Frankfurt School of Marxism had as its primary aim the breakdown of the family. And this is where the taxation of the family to lead to women being forced into the workplace and the growth of feminism and the breakdown of the family. Europeans have been disappearing. Do you know, in 1910, 32% of the world's population were Europeans. Now it's 9%. Actually, I think it's closer to 8% of the world is now Europeans. And instead, Europe is being invaded by Muslims who are talking about Europe becoming Arabia. And you can see it's just simple mathematics. And where's the father? The father has been gotten rid of. And in fact, this is most chronically seen amongst black American families where the black male is gone. In fact, just one of the stories I could not forget from James Dobson's book, Bringing Up Boys. He said that in prisons in America, for Mother's Day, Hallmark offered free Mother's Day cards, and they would cover the postage and everything. And they were just overwhelmed, and it seemed like every prisoner wanted a Mother's Day card and the service. And they were so astounded that they printed a whole lot more for Father's Day, and they went and tried it, and they said, this is the report in Bring Up Boys in James Dobson's book. Not one single prisoner in the American prison service wanted to send a Father's Day card. James Dobson follows on with the statistics that every single criminal in the criminal justice system has got a bad relation with the father, or doesn't know who his father is, or was abused by his father. But I mean, whatever it is, it was all bad, 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 very bad. They all loved their mother. Most of them hated their father, if they even knew who he was. And that's what's happened in the New World Order. And this is partly thanks to feminism. A true feminist would fight for the rights of pre-born women. Do you know, female babies are aborted at a greater rate than male babies because of amniocentesis tests, and especially in India, especially in China. Femininity inspires masculinity. And we've got a problem today because so many women have become masculine and so many males have become feminized. Women should be encouraging men to be protectors and defenders and providers. Marriage is still one man and one woman. What a radical thought crime. Remember, you exist because your parents were straight. Nobody here exists because of gay parents. I mean, really, it's just a fact. Love must be sincere. We to hate what is evil, we to cling to what is good. Don't worry about what people think of you. When you come to the end of this life, you're not going to stand before people, you're going to stand before God. And the only opinion that really will count in eternity is what God says to us. For this reason, God gave them up to vile passions. For even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Romans 1:26. Those who believe the lie of safe sex, as if there is such a thing, who sow sex education and promote promiscuity, like comprehensive sexuality education, what will they reap? What you sow is what you reap. They will reap the consequences of sexually transmitted diseases, STDs, gonorrhea, herpes, AIDS, and a whole lot worse. In fact, it's like playing Russian roulette. And by the way, cigarettes are also a way of killing your health. I think that's quite a good picture list. And that's what it is. I remember my parents laughing every time they lit up a cigarette, saying, another coffin nail, another nail in the coffin. And they'd laugh about these cancer sticks and coffin nails. Well, it's not very funny when you're standing in the Ward A in Hrudeskir and your parents are dying of emphysema. Tolerance for alternative lifestyles simply increases intolerance for Christ's lifestyle. This is a thought crime. This girl is quoting the Bible, homosexuality is sin, Christ can set you free. It's a grievous sin, it's an abomination, it's filthy, unlawful, vile, and unnatural, but Christ can set you free. Now this is biblical, it's true, but it's now a thought crime, and it can be called hate speech by some. Tolerance and apathy are the lost virtues of a dying society. Aristotle noted that 2,400 years ago. Now, by the Supreme Court opening the Pandora's box of allowing so-called homosexual unions or marriages, it's opening who knows what other garbage, including paedophilia, persecution of the church. When are they going to come up with bestiality even? And now we've got the thought police, the gay GB, I call them. Closed minds stop thought crimes. Report those who think for themselves or who quote from the Bible. Therefore, God gave them over in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie. God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even their women exchanged natural relations with unnatural ones. In the same way, men also abandoned natural relations with women, were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed indecent acts with other men and received in themselves a due penalty for their perversion. Although they knew God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continued to do these very things, but they also approved those who did them. This picture, by the way, comes from 2013 in America, after Obama managed to get homosexual marriage through their Supreme Court, and the homos organized a mock crucifixion of a Christ figure to celebrate it. This is not about freedom. This is about anti-Christian hatred. Gay pride is why Sodom got fried. Pride comes before fall. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. Humanism has rejected the law of God and instead is vigorously promoting situation ethics, amorality, existentialism, hedonism. What's hedonism? It's love of pleasure, basically. Pornography, homosexuality, gender confusion, comprehensive sexuality education, or CSE, they call it, and abortion. And all of this is part of the Gramsci strategy. This was cooked up in Frankfurt in the 1920s. Frankfurt School of Cultural Marxism used the Gramsci strategy, otherwise known as the termite strategy. You might have heard of names like Herbert Marcuse. Herbert Marcuse said, we must use foul language, obscene language, and blasphemy like verbal grenades against the bourgeois. We must use an art on a stage, in plays, in music. We need to break down Christian sensibilities by using foul language, introduced in the mainstream. And this also included people like George Lucas, not the one who's involved in Star Wars. This is a different spelling, different person. We must organize the intellectuals and use them to make Christian civilization stink. Only then, after they've corrupted all its values and made life impossible, we'll impose the dictatorship of the proletariat. And by the way, at one point, Hillary Clinton was asked who had been the most foremost thinker in her mind in her life, and she said Herbert Marcuse. Professor Herbert Marcuse, who advocated the use of foul language to break down Christian civilization. And there was another character, Antonio Gramsci, and he was the leader of the Italian Communist Party, founder of it, and he came up with the Gramsci strategy. Now, when Bill Clinton became president, he had asked which thinker had most influenced him, and he said, Antonio Gramsci, Bill Clinton, 1993. The termite strategy was advocated by Antonio Gramsci to eat the heart out of every pillar of Western civilization until the entire edifice rots and collapses. So like termites, when you want to buy a house, you've got to get a beetle certificate that there's no beetles in a roof, because if beetles are in a roof, all your pillars are going to collapse and the house is going to fall to pieces. I mean, beetles are bad, termites are bad. And he advocated eating the heart out of every pillar of Western civilization, which he advocated that we must see the entire edifice rot and collapse. So what were the main aims of the Frankfurt School, or critical race theory? Creation of racism offenses, number one. They saw the best way to create problems in Christian America was to try and turn the races who were getting on very well together against one another. Continual change to create confusion, teaching of sex and homosexuality to children, undermining of schools and teachers' authorities, huge immigration to destroy national identity, promotion of excessive drinking, emptying of churches. Boy, have they succeeded in that in 2020. And unreliable legal system with bias against the victims of the crime and for the criminals. Dependency on a state or state benefits. Don't have people being self-sufficient and feeding themselves anymore. Control and dumbing down the media. Have you ever seen that before? 11, encouraging the breakdown of the family and abolishing differences in the education of boys and girls. Now, I went to a boys' school all the way through till matric. And suddenly in matric, I was hurtled into the world of a co-ed school, and it was so shocking. I never thought that I'd long for the days of being bullied at the boys' school in Rhodesia, because, you know, the thing about boys is they just give you bruises, cuts and grazes, and that's it. But to be in a co-ed school and learn how vicious girls can be, I had no idea how they could destroy your very soul with just their words and their looks, and staggering. So I thought I was more traumatized by matric and Cape Town than I was by all the bullying and beatings and kickings I got at school in Rhodesia. And declare women to be an oppressed class and men to be oppressors. So have you recognized any of these strategies anywhere? This is what cultural Marxists want you to think is normal and natural and healthy. You see, multiculturalism is so good that we need armed police and army to protect us from it. Their goal is the secularization of society. not only for people to think of everything without regard to the Bible or God or Christ in particular, to turn the Christian mind into a non-Christian mind, but to turn to an anti-Christian mind, to sideline Christianity. And it called this critical theory and critical race theory and the Gramsci strategy, all under the Frankfurt School of Marxism or cultural Marxism. In other words, we're not going to win by revolutions in the street. We're going to win through the arts and the sciences and through the media and education. Deal with all issues without reference to the Bible. But the goal is clear. Destroy Christianity, which is the greatest obstacle to the achievement of communist goals. And so today you can see people walk around with something like going to hell and proud. You would never have been able to see that a century ago. If Jesus returns, kill him again. Undo Jesus.org, throw Christianity in trash can. On the day of judgment, this man is going to be calling for the mountains to cover him from the wrath of the Lamb. Now, the Marxists identified five primary culture-transforming institutions for infiltration and subversion. Popular schooling should be placed under control of great workers' unions. The problem of education is the most important class problem. You see, the problem is, up till then, all education was basically run by the church, Catholic Church or the Protestants. They were the ones dominating education. Governments weren't involved in education. Who advocated state involvement in education for the first time? Karl Marx, 1848, in the Marxist Manifesto. Because they'd lost. And the communists were the only party in town at Hollywood. They infiltrated, and they had as the highest goal at the first Comintern, Communist International. Joseph Stalin identified Hollywood. We must infiltrate Hollywood. And they did. And they were the only party in town. And they had fast money. Stalin gave them all the millions they needed to make sure they owned and controlled everything in Hollywood from the earliest days. And the news media, of course, very, very important. And right now, all of the media in America is basically owned by six individuals. Six individuals, can you imagine? Just take how the news media can distort things. When we had in 2015 the Charlie Hebdo massacre in Paris, they said that the heads of 26 countries led 1.6 million Parisians down the streets of Paris in protest. And there you can see Benjamin Netanyahu, and you can see François Hollande, Premier of France, and there's Angela Merkel, and all these other leaders from different countries. And what I thought when I saw this is, what a security nightmare. But not really. Because they weren't leading 1.6 million people. This is just down a side street. You can see the security everywhere. These are a group of people that have been tightly packed. And from the angle of the photo, it gives you the false impression. And with the newspaper headline leading 1.6 million, you know, honestly, this is the media. Look at this photographer crouching down here to get an angle to give the impression that Obama in Dar es Salaam of Tanzania in 2013 is unconcernedly, courageously walking amongst a group of people, just shaking hands with this adoring crowd. But notice, everyone's dressed the same. And they've all got alternate Tanzanian and American flags. And there's the FBI, CIA, whatever they are, with Kenyan or Tanzanian security around. And they're three deep, but this is a screened, select, rent-a-crowd group. This is a photo op. This is a total photo op to give a false impression. The media. You can see this here. They really have an agenda. Religious institutions being hijacked. Political institutions being hijacked. A Marxist KGB agent, Yuri Bezmenov, in 1984 outlined the four stages of ideological subversion. Demoralization, destabilization, crisis, normalization. And he says, it takes a couple of generations to demoralize a country. But the highest art of warfare is not to fight at all, but to subvert everything of value in the country of the enemy. Until such time, the perception of reality of the enemy is so screwed up to such an extent he doesn't perceive you as an enemy. You can then take your enemy without a shot being fired. And that is what is going on right now in the West. The communists realize they cannot beat us in war. We beat them in every battle we've ever had. They've never won a war. But boy, can they win the peace. Because they know how to lie and cheat. And demoralization. They can demoralize a country. And I've seen this happen all over South Africa. And I've seen it happen all over America and Europe too. Demoralization. No fornicator, unclean person, nor covetous man who is an adulterer has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. He could see, instead of the pillars of civilization, we've got the pillars of ignorance. We've got ideology, incompetence, nepotism, unaccountability, laziness, arrogance, and corruption. And then there's national suicide. Those who promote open borders dramatically increase taxes, because the people coming through open borders are not normally coming to contribute to your economy, but to parasite off it. To destabilize society and to escalate crime. I mean, as I said, the left are standing on the shoulders of some jihadist bomber who wants to blow you up. And how many people have gotten beheaded in France in recent years? And even Vienna getting attacks, and Muslim terrorists attacking people, hacking people in London, right on Tower Bridge. Europe is the cancer. Islam is the answer. Exterminate those who slander Islam. Freedom, go to hell. Well, that's eloquent. But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall be that those whom you let remain will be irritants in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they shall harass you in the land where you dwell. I don't think Numbers 33 verse 55 is quoted much in the context of immigration issues today. But those who promote diversity inevitably sow the seeds for greater intolerance and violent clashes, which is the intention. Communism thrives on crisis and conflict. And if there isn't conflict, and if a country is too peaceful, like Denmark or Sweden, we'll import the problems. Yes. Those who are promoting multiculturalism are actually promoting the demographic suicide of the host nation and the death of the culture and the death of the people. Because that's what communism wants. Death, chaos, destruction. They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare to you. Those promoting hate speech laws are actually promoting censorship and increased intolerance. The first fact checker was Satan. You read in Genesis 3. They're not fact checkers. They're fact blockers. They're fact deniers. They're fact selectors. They're fact manipulators. The most anointed false prophet on earth today is the lying media. It has millions of Christians underneath its influence, and they don't even know it. The amount of Christians I come across who will say something like, they'll just regurgitate whatever the media said about whatever the issues of the day. And you immediately know what they're listening to, what they're reading, what they're watching. And do you know this person? Have you ever met this person? Have you ever heard this? No. We know that the media lied about us when we were in Rhodesia. We know the media lied about us in South Africa. We know the media lies about Christians. We know the media lies about pro-lifers. Why do we believe them when they talk about Donald Trump, for example, or the situation in the Netherlands or anywhere else in the world? We know that they lied about what we know about. Why do we trust them on things that we don't know about? Why don't we just assume the media is lying? And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Those who champion centralized government are promoting inefficiency, wastage, corruption, and oppression. You know what this great monument was of the Mayan civilization? They marched people up there to have their hearts ripped out. Then they rolled their heads down and threw the body over the side because they needed to sacrifice beating hearts to make the sun rise each day. But don't worry, they only used captured slaves from neighboring tribes, so that made it right. That's now the way National Geographic puts it. But this is what pyramid centralized structures are like. Tower of Babel, Pharaoh, Nineveh, that sort of thing. He who justifies the wicked and he who condemns the just, both of them are like an abomination to the Lord. Hate evil, love good, establish justice in the gate. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Love and faithfulness go before you. Those promoting defund the police are actually encouraging even worse riots and looting and chaos, inevitably vigilantism and murder, actually. If these people had the type of government they'd want to, none of them would be allowed to protest. You see, what happens after the French Revolution and the Bolshevik Revolution and the Zimbabwe Revolution? Any further riots and protests are just shot. Simple. And that, and we're not talking about rubber bullets or tear gas either. I mean hard bullets. The Bolsheviks, once they got to power, they turned machine guns on protesters. Antifa is protesting for the extinction because they'll be the first ones to get in the neck if they get the kind of communist government they're rioting for. BLM is 70% white people, And it was started by and run by whites in the name of black people. They're just using them as useful front men for their Marxist agenda. Statistically, black Americans are far safer in police custody than their mother's womb, because the highest demographic of abortion on the planet are black Americans. More black Americans are aborted than are born. This is war indeed, quite right. And you should recognize this is a Marxist revolution on the streets. Antifa started in Frankfurt as part of the Frankfurt School. They were the foot soldiers. Their name was Antifascist. They had the same logo, same name, same style, same font. Frankfurt School, Antifa, same people. These are the guys on the streets, while the others were the professors in the marketplace. And we know how this works in this country. While they promise them freedom, they themselves are slaves of depravity. Every ordinance of man, for the Lord's sake, who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. Those promoting pornography are actually increasing gender-based violence, and they're devaluing all life. That's why we're told to choose life, so that both you and your descendants may live. By undermining the sanctity of marriage, which we have to remind people is one man, one woman for life, and undermining the sanctity of life, because a person is a person no matter how small, by undermining private ownership of property and freedom of speech. In fact, they're beating freedom of speech to death on university campuses in the name of tolerance. So you're telling me that you believe in diversity, but that I can't have a different opinion. In fact, you can't. You might have libraries of thought in your mind, but these guys have slogans. For a country who killed an entire generation in the womb, but tells adults to wear masks to save lives. What a joke. Millions, tens of millions killed by abortion, and the same people responsible for that and supporting that are telling you they're so concerned about your life they want you to wear a mask. So let me get this straight. All the projections were wrong, because all the assumptions are wrong, but we still can't go outside because the people who were wrong said so. That's about it. Wuhan Health Organization. This is child abuse. Pointing a gun-like laser item at the forehead of people. Nobody should tolerate this. This is unacceptable. It's unnecessary. This is to prepare you for a mentality of take the mark. Take a mark of the beast before you can buy, sell in the marketplace mentality. What a mentality. Who would have ever believed that simply breathing openly in public would be thought of as selfish and considered a crime? The COVID cult, how do you brainwash people? You isolate them, you conform them, you indoctrinate them through repetition, and then lots of fear and trauma. We know people who are so afraid, we've invited them to come to a meal or a Thanksgiving, and next thing say they can't because of their fear of COVID. Or they're not allowed to because they're in an old age home, which won't allow them to go out. Because what is going on in our society? So if you've ever felt stupid, just remember that people depriving themselves of oxygen to protect themselves from a virus that they're going to inject themselves with later. Now, on the left you see someone who's perfectly normal, and on the right you see a sociopath because she refused to wear a mask. COVID-19 is not killing people. Weak immune systems are killing people, and bad doctors are. The tests are rigged. The death count is false. The masks are useless. Hand sanitizer is toxic. Vaccines are poison. The government media are lying. Seems to be a pretty good summary to me. Governments love pandemics. They love pandemics for the same reason they love war. It gives them the ability to impose controls on a population that the population would otherwise never accept, creating institutions and mechanisms for orchestrating and imposing obedience. That's pretty accurate. That's what they're doing. It's not like the government cares about us. If they really cared about us, they wouldn't be stealing trillions from us. So they lied to you about, well, there's a whole lot of things, but they're telling the truth about COVID. Governments have a record of lying about next to everything. So you just think, my parents said they were brought up with adverts telling you that you need to smoke to strengthen your lungs and it was healthy for you. Cigarettes are good for your health, literally. 40 years ago, when I started my practice, this doctor said only 1 in 10,000 children had autism. Now it's 1 in 100. What's the difference? The inordinate number of vaccines that have been given to children. But he says that, just take, for example, the Amish. You don't get any case of autism amongst them, and they don't take any vaccines or GMOs or anything else like that. Theodore Roosevelt in 1901 said, "The man who advocates anarchy, directly or indirectly, in any shape or fashion, or the man who apologizes for anarchists or their deeds, makes himself morally accessory to murder before the fact. The anarchist is a criminal whose perverted instincts lead him to prefer confusion and chaos to the most beneficial forms of social order. His protest of concern for working men is outrageous in its impudent falsity. For if the political institutions of this country do not afford opportunity to every honest and intelligent son of toil, then the door of hope is forever closed against him. The anarchist," that's the word for revolutionary back then, "is everywhere, not merely the enemy of system and of progress, but the deadly foe of liberty. If ever anarchy is triumphant, its triumph will last for but one red moment, to be succeeded for ages by the gloomy night of despotism." He saw that in 1901. Well, in 1917, people saw it again. He's doubtless thinking of the French Revolution, but this has happened in every revolution 20th century. The anarchist on the street doesn't lead to freedom. He leads to greater oppression, always. The real conspiracy theorists believe in that the government cares about them. The media would never mislead or lie to them, and the pharmaceutical industry that makes billions of sickness wants to cure them. Yeah? Is that not accurate? I mean, that's a conspiracy theory. That is ridiculous. That's balakhla. Does anybody really believe Bill Gates is concerned for your health? He wants to bring the world's population down to 100 million. He'd like to get rid of 7 billion surplus people, but he's concerned to extend your life expectancy with vaccines.
Where do you come up with that number?
No, that's the stats. The Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation said the world's overpopulated. We need to bring it down to a billion. Ultimately, the goal should be 100 million for sustainability. 100 million people worldwide, total world population.
They said that publicly.
Yes. No, not just said, that's published, yeah. No, that's not exactly hidden. That is what these eugenicists and so on are talking about. The world's overpopulated, and we need to get rid of a good 7 billion people. So these are the same people who want to vaccinate you to extend your life expectancy, the ones who want to depopulate the world. Conflict of interest, maybe? Those who are threatening your freedom of thought, never have we seen such censorship as these thought police of Zuckerberg's on Facebook these days. Orwell called them thought police. Zuckerberg calls them fact checkers. I call them fact blockers, fact deniers, fact censors. Freedom of the press is absolutely essential for freedom. And we're getting a cacophony of the same parroted answers from the media. Let's get back to books, old books. And freedom of conscience. Now, you've heard of the scarlet letter. Scarlet letter used to be if a person committed the sin of adultery, they'd have to wear the scarlet letter of an A. These days, it's the scarlet letter of R for racist. I mean, because if you accuse a person of being a racist, then they destroy it forever. You don't need proof. You don't need facts. Just the accusation is enough to destroy a person's life. Mental slavery is the worst form of slavery. It gives you the illusion of freedom. Makes you trust, love, and defend your oppressor, Stockholm Syndrome, while making an enemy of those who are trying to free you and open your eyes. Your beliefs seem intolerant, so you're burning you at the stake. I mean, that's basically how it is now. We're deplatforming you in a name of tolerance, we not tolerance of your different views. And what about freedom of education? In fact, today it's more like indoctrination conveyor belt. And freedom of association? Not really. You could get into serious trouble. The evidence coming out of spyware that Zuckerberg's been confronted by senators in America on the spyware he's using to spy on people, not merely while they are using Facebook, but all their internet activities, colossal amount of espionage activity that they are invading the freedom of associations and thoughts and opinions of billions of people worldwide. Your freedom of movement, well, that's been curtailed this year heavily, hasn't it? Freedom of religion, never have we seen so many churches closed. Over Easter, 3 billion Christians worldwide not allowed to attend worship. Unbelievable, unheard of. Secular humanists and socialists are undermining the essential foundations for a free, prosperous, and productive society. Secular humanism is a self-destructive ideology. Psalm 34, verse 21 says, "Evil will slay the wicked, Resistance to tyranny is obedience to God. That was a slogan of John Knox, and it was quoted during the American War of Independence too. The selfishness and the short-sightedness of modern society is seen in litter-strewn, graffiti-vandalized communities and pollution-afflicted areas. That is exact opposite of caring for God's creation. Deforestation leads to drought. How long will a land lie parched and the grass in every field be withered? Because those who live in it are wicked, the birds and animals have perished. It's a sign of wickedness to have deforestation. And I grieve for the fact that millions of trees in the Cape Peninsula have been chopped down in the last 26 years. I used to drive through forest on both sides, all the way from Cape Town Airport, all the way up the N2, through Somerset West, all the way through the pass, past Crabow, down to Hermanus. You'd go through forest the whole way. They have chopped down forest from Constantia Neck, Celia Forest. It's criminal. How do the people in the Cape tolerate this from a government who claims to care about the environment? The earth is the Lord's and all its fullness, the world and those who dwell therein. By advocating alternative lifestyles, by promoting homosexuality, lesbianism, bisexuality, gender confusion, secular humanists undermine the very foundation, the essential foundation for any society, which is the family. The family is not only essential, this is now the most radical thing in society. This is the target of hatred by the cultural Marxists. There's no greater purpose in raising the next generation. Raising your children in a loving home, reading and teaching and discipling the next generation, worshipping as a family. The animals do a good job. Look here, these parents saving a baby bird falling out of the weaver bird nest, and you see the father pushing, the mother pulling, and but all of nature, parented, is the highest example of love, said Martin Luther. We're meant to make the world a better place, and we start with the home. And a house is not a home without pets, by the way. Romans 1:27 speaks of the anti-family movement. The men burned in their lust for one another, men with men committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty of the error which was due. Their consequences. Secular humanists are attempting to kill God by eradicating him from the classroom and from the minds of the next generation. If you haven't seen Expelled film by Ben Stein, it's not meant to be a comedy, but actually it is, even though it's true. To just, when he gets Richard Dawkins and tries to find out after Richard Dawkins belittles Christianity. So how do you think life came to earth? And there's Richard Dawkins, the author of The God Delusion, saying, aliens. Aliens? Aliens from outer space. Serious, yes. He believes aliens from outer space came and put life on Earth. So where did those aliens come from? Other aliens from other spaces. Where did they come from? And you could carry on. But this is Richard Dawkins, who ridicules Christians for being gullible. And what does he believe? He believes in aliens. By eliminating the Bible as the basis for all knowledge, humanists remove the very foundation of truth. Secularists are prohibiting the only objective stand by which reality can even be evaluated. And government schools are indoctrination gulags, and it's a crime to sentence poor kids to 12 years hard labor in this brain-numbing, soul-destroying environment. Indoctrination, if you haven't seen the film, well worth seeing it. Now, we expect this in North Korea and Red China, but honestly, our schools are going in the same direction of indoctrination. 500 years ago, German reformer Professor Martin Luther warned, "I'm much afraid the schools will prove to be wide gates to hell unless they diligently labor in explaining the Holy Scriptures, engraving them in the hearts of youth. I advise no one to put his child where the Scriptures do not reign paramount." Every institution in which men are not constantly occupied with the Word of God must become corrupt. Beware lest anyone cheat you through philosophy and empty deceit according to the tradition of men, according to the basic principles of the world and not according to Christ. Secular humanism is self-destructive. By promoting the theory of evolution, humanists are promoting a meaningless existence in a chance universe. You came from nothing. You're going nowhere, and life is meaningless. Who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshipped and served the creature instead of the creator is to be blessed forever. Evolution is an attempt to retroactively abort God. Evolution destroys your meaning, purpose, direction, justice, and hope in life. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. By promoting atheism, secular humanists offer no God, no future, no hope. It's easy to be an atheist. Just deny God, your eyes, common sense, probabilities, rationality, and logic. Everything around us points to God. The fool says in his heart there is no God. They are corrupt. Their deeds are vile. There is no one who does good. We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. Superficial, sensational, immoral material predominates in the modern entertainment industry, is producing increasingly superficial, selfish, mindless, and immoral society. And why not? When you understand that the people producing these films are vile, sexual perverts and predators. When you understand that Hollywood has been a cesspool of communism and abuse for so long. When you understand that Oprah Winfrey, who is idolized and listened to by so many women worldwide, while she idolizes a low-down pervert like Harvey Weinstein. And no wonder their films are vile. The people producing them are vile. And they are pumping raw sewage into people's hearts, minds, and homes. The scripture tells us whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. And that's why we've tried to focus on victorious Christians to change the world, the greatest century reformation, greatest century missions, because self-educated people cannot be fooled by institutionalized propaganda. Books are the quietest and most constant of friends. They're the most accessible and wisest of counselors, the most patient of teachers. If my people are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, I will forgive their sin and I will heal their land. Have you humbled yourself? Are you praying? Are you seeking God's face? Are you turning from your wicked ways? Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? And then I answered, here am I, Lord, send me. Any questions or comments? I think the key thing is to recognize secular humanism is not just a threat, it is the threat. And so we've got to disconnect from the Marxist hijacked mass media, entertainment industry, news media, and education institutions. That's why homeschooling, supporting alternative Christian media, all of these things would be the right way to go. You know, support the good, boycott the bad, be selective, be discerning. And when we are viewing, for whatever reason, negative things, to do so very critically. I think it's so important. So you can actually get a lot when you understand the agenda. You've got to have your brain in neutral. You can't ever have your brain in neutral. You can't even go to a concert or a play without having some critical faculty involved, because you're going to get good and bad and questionable. And it's also good to go back and double check in Bible or history to see, is this true? Is that right? What would I have done differently? So Ted Baer has a whole lot of key critical questions he recommends people to evaluate films by. What would you have done differently? And, you know, things like this. And so if we can think critically, it's good. Because you don't want to even, there's even good films and good characters about positive things where they've got some questionable element and you often investigate, find they just stuck that in. It's not even true. It didn't even happen. Why did they put that in? And so that can make a difference. Even just, you know, I accept that, but I can't accept that. You've got to make value judgments basically on everything. When you realize, you know, in a war, when I was in the bush and when I've been in war zones, you've got to watch where you put every foot. Tripwires, booby traps, landmines, ambushes. There's a whole range of threats, not to mention possibility of wildlife and stepping on a crocodile when you thought he's a log, things like that. So you've got to watch your step in anywhere in life. And in the concrete jungle, there's probably more traps than on in the bush. So we just can't go along in a zombie state of not being alert. Got to be very alert. When we recognize we're in a war, I think it makes everything different. Other comments?
Just a quick comment about one of the final points you raised on self-education. There's not books out there to keep you busy your whole life. Just essential parts of, I would say, self-education. So someone like me, I've been through, partial government, partial primary education system, university. Where are the missing links? That's, I suppose, the reason my question.
Okay. Okay.
What you even do with the rules.
Well, okay, we've got a whole library downstairs. Now, if anyone wants to ask me and say, I would like some recommend books on, so I mean, if you say, for my discipleship, or for history of the Second World War, or South African history, or on economics, or on theory of education, if I know the field, I could give you some good recommended tips. I could probably put some books, or if you say, I prefer videos, I could put videos and documentaries in your hand. It's very easy when it comes to creation science. Well, Answers in Genesis has the best. We've got a whole video range, we've got a whole book range. So, again, it's got to be specific because everyone's got different interests and backgrounds.
Yeah, I think I'm asking something almost more fundamental than that. It's not really about topical learning, it's more as a fundamental basis of learning. What are the areas you need to be almost a whole person, a whole intellectual? So.
Well, if you want the one stop overall, then we're talking about David Noble's Understanding Times. That's James Kennedy said, reading Understanding the Times will be more benefit to you than university education. But Understanding the Times is a thick, big book, but it tackles 10 subjects from the perspective of all the different worldviews, Marxist, New Age, secular humanist, through to Christian and Islam. So, of course, not a bedside readings thing. You go for this subject when you need to know about this and so on. But he's summarized it in Mind Siege as an easy read, and then Battle for Truth is a more compact. So David Noble's analyzed the full worldview on all the big battlefronts. So that's probably a one-stop. But if a person has a particular area they want to focus on, then, well, of course, James Dobson's done the most on Focus and Family and Ken Ham on Creation Science and so on. So if you're into apologetics, I'd say R.C. Sproul and so on. So James Kennedy, when it comes to engaging with the culture of today and applying scripture to it. There's a great selection. Now, we've got thousands of books downstairs, but I can put in your hand something that is ideal for you if you ask me specifically what you're interested in. So, other questions, comments? Henry?
So, you say that the education system, higher education system, has been founded by Christians, missionaries and all of these folks. Now, why would we be retreating from those fortresses that we built and leave it to the hands of the communists and these folks so that we can go and build a smaller fort within the house and homeschool and so forth? Why not go back and try and fight for those institutions?
Excellent, excellent question. So true. Several quick answers. One thing is the world wars derailed people. The Christians were building up to taking over the world, the Great Commission, World Missions Conference 1910 Edinburgh, and then they got derailed with the First World War. And it's like they completely forgot what we're here for and ended up fighting fellow Christians. And I think that's the biggest catastrophe in the history of Christian civilization, was the First World War, followed up by the Second. And it's so derailed, and people like my parents, who came from Christian families, were secularized because after the trauma of the Second World War, they couldn't believe in God. Praise God, they got saved much later, but they were very, as many were, numbed by the horrors of the war and city bombings and things like this. So people in the West were so hammered, and at the same time, you had a lot of escapist Christianity. From the full-orb Christianity that started the 20th century, you got into this very simplified, we're living in last days, Jesus coming, rapture, the 666 and this, and they all got caught up in we're living in last days and we're the terminal generation. And this isn't just me hearing this in 1977, Bill Bathman was hearing this in the 40s, and then you find out other people were hearing it for them. For a century, Christians have been getting distracted to forget about the long term. There is no long term. I don't have too many pictures of me in early years as a Christian because I wasn't thinking of getting married, let alone having children, let alone grandchildren, because I was a terminal generation, Jesus coming in 1978. So, you know, why would you be thinking ahead? Seriously, there's a lot of us like that. And Christians abandoned the universities and abandoned the governments and abandoned the culture because we were just snatch a few souls in the fire, we're going to get raptured next week, and there wasn't this long-term goal. And then there was another thing. There was a whole lot of people teaching it's worldly and unspiritual to be involved in these things. And there came an anti-intellectualism into the church where you shouldn't go to university. And so you can imagine when Christians shouldn't get involved in politics, would you believe it? Politics got really bad. They are told you shouldn't get involved in politics, but isn't that a self-fulfilling prophecy? The salt and the light was removed, and things went worse. And then Christians said, that's even more reason to pull away because it's so bad. And so it got even worse. And the university is the same. And so it was that Christians, after building up the most advanced civilization in history, abandoned it all through bad theology, short-sightedness, and a whole lot of things. And you can just see how the devil cleverly positioned his people and distracted and disorientated and disinformed Christians so that we wasted our time, we got confused, we got divided, we got corrupted, we got conquered. And so the 20th century is the worst century in Christian civilization. Never has the church lost so much as it lost in the 20th century. Never have so many Christians been murdered for their faith, martyred, as in the 20th century, more than all the other 19th centuries combined. And just leaving the rest of the world and just taking South Africa. South Africa, where we were 40 years ago. And you look where we are now. Same in miniature of what's happened to Europe over the last century. Abandoning our Christian civilization, being distracted, guilt manipulated, and getting short-term views and thinking the rapture's coming any moment, so it doesn't really matter that all this is going to hell in a handbasket. I was in a car traveling with four great Christian leaders, and I won't even mention this, I wouldn't want to put them in a bad light, but we talk about how bad the country was. Now I'm talking about back in the 90s. And this one brother said, after he'd mentioned some hideous things, when I see these things, I just praise God. It means Jesus is coming soon. And when this brother said this, I just felt so sick in my heart that any Christian could praise God for such anti-Christ blasphemous evil. How confused can you be? But there's a lot of people like that. They have been taught to rationalize, to justify why it's okay that we've basically retreated from victory and handed over whole civilizations to the hands of God-hating pagans. That's why it's so important to know our history and understand what happened and what we've lost so that we can regain and rebuild. Which is, of course, what Reformation societies and biblical worldview summits are all about.
I want to go back to Henry's question. So why is the strategy abandoned?
Why?
Why continue to abandon universities as opposed to...
We must abandon the universities. In fact, I think the universities should all be won back to Christ. But that doesn't mean that you send your children there to be decimated by the professors. It means that we need to get people in to the... Well, it's one thing to go on the campus and do some outreaches and the people are there and give them the means to try and reclaim the campus for Christ. But realistically, you've got to get into the professors and the, you've got to get into lectures because the students on the ground can make a little bit of an impact, but not much. The main thing is you've got to get control of the universities. That's going to take a lot longer. But you don't send your soldiers into battle till they're trained. And so the whole idea that you send unskilled, untrained, disarmed people into an area where the enemy's strong, they're just going to get slaughtered or turned to fight for the enemy. And these parents who think that their little kiddie going off to government school are going there as little missionaries, but they've been trained and they're coming back as little pagans into your household. In many cases, it's not working as well as many want. And I would say we've got to be careful. Obviously, there's a big difference between primary school, high school, and university. There might be people who say, I've done such a good job with my children, with my schooling, I can trust them to go to university, a secular university. and have a Christian witness? Well, it can be done if they're a strong type of personality, but they need a lot of prayer support and practical backup, because it's a serious warfare. I think the films like God's Not Dead give a bit of an understanding of the battlefields on these campuses, but of course it's more intense.
That's
entertainment, but it's very intense warfare. And to think that the average Christian can go in there and actually win a debate in the classroom of the professor, chances are slim, very slim. You know, unless you've written a script, it's not going to go according to plan most of the times. That's why starting alternative Christian colleges is a short term. Obviously, it's disgraceful that we've abandoned these universities. I'd like us to win them back, but we will win them back long term. We're not going to win it back by sending our children there to get the education from people who are selecting the subjects, the textbooks, and directing the thought patterns in their predetermined ways.
I'm thinking now of the scripture somewhere in Proverbs, I'm just finding. There is safety in a multitude of counselors.
Yes.
So maybe we must look at student groups who are biblically sound, who can actually just bring the rest up to the biblical perspective that they need, so that they will not become so brainwashed by those professors, so that they can become more sound and more strongly in the foundation of the Christian faith. So that there's much more of a stronger base for them.
Yes, so for example, Campus Crusade for Christ had the goal of providing good, strong campus ministries. There was a time when Campus Crusade for Christ was very prevalent and strong on campuses. For some reason, they're not so on our university campus. You see groups that are strong for a time, but often that group graduates and there's not a new group. And so you find it's a bit erratic, which is sad. We need a lot of groups to focus on winning the campuses. And I know that that's a big emphasis of Taryn, and Taryn did university campus outreaches, and we've done debates up there. I've had some good debates up at campus on, for example, blasphemy and atheism and so on, debating the humanist societies. But seldom have we found a campus ministry willing to host you and organize the event. And so you need groups on the campus, but they often get overwhelmed with assignments and work, and then, of course, they get sometimes targeted and hammered by the university leadership as well. Still, we've got to go there. We've got to win these places.